and welcome to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
We have been waiting to do this show for about a year.
I would say it's exactly a year. This
Avengers Endgame.
Funny enough, this is kind of a anniversary of sorts for this show. Our inaugural show was Avengers Infinity War. So not only does this mark a huge film, not just in terms of like box office or significance, but it's also, like I said, it's not a special. I'm not saying like we need to have parades or anything.
I am saying we
it's,
do.
It's self-important, but I also understand that self-importance doesn't always translate to actual importance.
Now, we are going to talk about Endgame. We are not going to ruin the film for you. So you're just going to have to trust us. Anything we tell you is not spoilage.
No, we will reveal things from like previews, mm-hmm. things that
common knowledge.
You will know that. Like, we're not going to let you know who dies. We're not going to give you main plot points.
We're not
like,
even going to say anybody dies.
Exactly.
I'm
trying to make sure I'm not giving anything away. That was me running it through the processor.
So yeah. All right. First of all, what a great movie.
I don't remember who said this on Twitter, but I thought it really kind of summed it up. They said, Avengers Endgame does not meet expectations. It blows them away and obliterates them entirely.
Yes. So let's start with the numbers. Why don't you look up and see? Now, we record on Sunday night, so is there anything added to what you saw earlier today?
The only thing that is going to happen after those numbers is Monday and Tuesday. You may get like, these are estimated numbers based on the way it's trending now. So it could be slightly higher or slightly lower, but usually your Sunday night estimates are going to be pretty spot on.
And the Sunday night estimate for worldwide domination that they had guessed was going to make around $900 million made what, Adam?
$1.2 billion opening weekend, which is obviously a significant milestone, and also trounced the former holder of that crown, Avengers Infinity War.
Mm-hmm. And how much did that make? Do you know?
Domestically, it made $268 million, which had beat Force Awakens, I think, by about $10 million.
And domestically, this was $344, I think.
Yes. It was like right at like $350 million.
I like how we're tossing that around like that's nothing. It only made $344 million, but globally, billion.
Well, I mean, they're both significant.
Yes.
Like the most any, and when I say any, weekend, I'm talking about adding all of the films together. If you take their grosses and add them together, the best weekend there has ever been, or on record at least, was $313 million, which was also the weekend that Infinity War came out. And I'm saying you add Infinity War and every other movie that was playing that weekend added to $313 million. Mm-hmm. Avengers Endgame made $350 million by itself. Funny enough, do you know what the number two movie was?
I'm just going to say Captain Marvel.
It was Captain Marvel. Yeah. Disney's having a
and
really
Shazam number three?
Good... I don't remember. I thought it was funny that Marvel owned the top... Now, granted, it's only like 8.3 million, and it's whatever weekend this is for Captain Marvel. Mm-hmm. So it's significantly below the film in the number one spot. But still, you know, Disney's just sitting there going, yeah, we got one and two. And they're like, well, number two's less than 10. And they're like, hush, we have one and two. Hush.
That's right. We've got it going on.
Don't rain on this parade.
I remember going to see movies when people would, you know, applaud at the end. And the best way, I think, to see Endgame is to see it as soon as possible and see it in a crowded theater.
I think it is very much a communal experience.
Yeah.
There are some films, generally like smaller films, like, you know, you've got a very, you know, nuanced performance. Like, those can be seen in the comfort of your own home. This, and I think just the size of it itself almost requires that you see it in a 7.1 surround sound on a theater screen that's, you know, 30 feet in the mm-hmm. air. But I mean, This is the 22nd film. It's over the course of 10 years. These films have made, I think, a combined like $18 billion at this point. I mean, there are so many people that are wrapped up like in this. It feels more satisfying. And I'm sure whenever this thing comes out on home video, like I'll own it as well and I'll watch it. I'm certain continuously. But especially when you get that first drop, when you are getting to experience it that first or second time, like you really do want it to be surrounded by like-minded people.
Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful, albeit slightly irritating because I couldn't see it with you and I had to listen to nerds who were not of our level. And there were people there who had not seen Infinity War. And so this guy...
I don't even know how you
get... Why would you go?
When we saw Days of Future Past, like it came out in 2014, the X-Men film, the people that were sitting directly to our right were just kind of there. They were there on just like a date. And from the sound of it, neither of them were really into the X-Men movies. And they were at like a... It wasn't a midnight showing, but it was like a 10 p.m. On the day before it came out. And I'm just like, what are you doing in at a 10 o'clock show for a movie that you're kind of indifferent? Like, that's like me showing up to the midnight showing of like Twilight and just being like, yeah, I'm not really even into vampires. I wasn't doing anything and people seem to be lining up and I'm a sheep, so I just did it too.
Well, I really don't recall the last time I heard an entire audience. Yes, I've heard them laughing, yes, clapping, but this time it was several times of yes and screeches of delight. And actual sobbing I heard through the whole theater.
There are, like I said, I think communal really was the word to use there. But there are some moments in this film that I think there's a lot of people that have been waiting for these specific moments or anticipating certain moments. And for, you know, you get to share that moment, not just with like one or two people or, you know, 10 people, but like 300 other people that have also been waiting for that moment since the year like 2008 or 2012 or whenever like that particular character came in and you were like, well, maybe this is where their art goes. Maybe this is where like their end game, as it were.
Now, again, what we're saying here, not a spoiler. We said this, any moron would realize this. After Infinity War, when all those people are snapped out of existence, there's clearly going to be a way to bring some or all of them back because, first of all, Doctor Strange, and second of all, there wouldn't be another movie if you couldn't bring them back.
And they've also more or less implied that several of these films were going to have sequels, and there was no implication that they were prequels, like either. Like, if you will look at Black Panther's gross alone, there was going to be a Black Panther 2. There was.
And they all got snapped away.
You don't make $1 billion and not get a sequel. Like,
so what was fun is as the people who had been snapped away reappear, just the delight in the crowd was awesome.
Well, I think your girls... You had mentioned your girls whenever they saw Infinity War. They weren't there for Empire Strikes Back. And I'm using that kind of as the parlance there. For those of you who don't know, and if you're listening to this podcast and you don't know what the Empire Strikes Back is, I question
why?
You. Yeah. But B, it ends on a very dour note. Things are not happy for the rebellion. And they really hadn't got to, they weren't caught up in a film series like that. And they didn't have that disappointment. And for those of you that, again, haven't seen Infinity War, it also ends on a pretty dour note to the tune of half of the universe is dead, snapped away.
Now, even though there was no such thing as the internet, we, the fan base, knew that this was going to be a trilogy, and we knew that another film was coming with Empire. And Adam and I, jaded creatures that we are, I had to calm my children by saying at the end of Infinity War, there are already movies signed, so chill.
Well, when it was in its infancy and they were just using placeholder names, like the films were called Infinity War Part 1 and Infinity War Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
That somewhere in all of that, they changed it to Endgame and Infinity War. But I mean, like, I knew conclusively that Marvel wasn't done.
Right.
Like, when you have a cash cow like this, you milk that thing mm-hmm. until the udders shoot dust.
But we also follow the actors, and we're not going to remind you of anything, but we follow the actors. The actors have said things about what they want to do with their careers and what they want to do with Marvel.
Or that they mentioned contractual
yes,
obligations. We
some
knew
contracts
that
were
some,
up.
Some people were signed on for X amount of movies.
Mm-hmm.
This actor, Endgame may be their final film on their contract.
Right.
Or, you know, they've even openly said, this is it for me. I'm done. They're not coming out and saying, I die in this movie, but they're saying, I will not be making
this character.
This character, I will not appear as this character in any future films mm-hmm. beyond Endgame.
So when you have all that, what Adam and I had thought would happen with some of the characters, not how it would happen, but what I thought would happen, did happen because we pieced it all together because we're nerds like that. I can say all of the loose ends that were wrapped up were done beautifully.
And when you look at the scope that, you are dealing with, and like I believe we're about 22 films in, you have a literal army mm-hmm. of characters, and like you are trying to satisfyingly tie all of this together. I don't know that there is a film besides maybe of recent, and when I say recent memory, 20 years ago, the Lord of the Rings films.
That was 20 years ago?
2001, 2002, and 2003.
Wow.
It's not quite 20 years.
I would have said 5 years.
We're coming up on it. But I mean,
man.
I don't know that I remember something as complete, complex,
right,
and satisfying as this movie. And like, I am an individual that is hard to please when it comes to things like that. I understand that. Like I am a nerd in every like description of that word. I will nitpick. I will pull apart. And there are things in this movie. And like I said, it was going to be very difficult to be perfect. Like
yes,
I wouldn't call it a perfect film, but it is so close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I would almost say like there are points that it's just, it's almost transcendent mm-hmm. of its, of what it's trying to do. And like I said, there are moments, and when I say I have qualms, they're minor,
mm-hmm.
minor qualms. And they're just things that possibly as if I was the auteur involved, I might have done differently.
Mm-hmm.
But largely, like I'm talking about like 99.9% of this film, it's just it's right. Like
right.
they did the Lord's work on this.
So the movie itself takes place, the movie starts on the very same day that the last movie ended on. So when you get the opportunity to watch them back to back, there is no 5 years later. This is starting right now.
It very much kind of Back to the Future 2's itself.
Mm-hmm.
It like where the other one dropped off, this one goes directly into it.
And as we suspected / assumed, in order to fix the Thanos snap, there has to be some manner of time travel, time resetting, time something something, because we knew Doctor Strange had said there was a one in gajillion chances. And so I left the theater of Infinity War thinking, well, Strange has done something, and it will be time-related.
Well, and Strange himself is the holder of the Time Stone.
Yes, and
or was before he gave it up.
So, there's that. And through the trailers, we knew that Ant-Man was going to be in this. And
let's pause for just one moment.
Let's take a... take Paul, a time for Paul
if
Rudd.
If you don't know this, Paul Rudd is a national treasure,
mm-hmm.
and should be conserved and worshipped as the comedic god mm-hmm. that he is. Like my wife, who is not into these movies,
but is now because of Paul Rudd.
she is just sitting there, and like she's seen two of the films. That, like, so she's going into this pretty cold. She's asking me quite a bit of questions, like, just curious about that. But I'm going to tell you, when Paul Rudd was on the screen, she was into this movie. And my wife doesn't like superhero movies, probably because that's the only thing that I want to watch, or TV shows that I want to watch, or the comic book posters or action figures that she wants me to hide or mm-hmm. put in storage. So it's I get it. I understand why she doesn't like it. But Paul Rudd is such an ambassador. He got her to connect to this, and I did not think that was going to happen.
You're listening to Parental Guidance Suggested, brought to you by Hintz and Oakley Family Dentistry. Jane Ellen talking with Adam Cravens. Now, to prep you, a little Paul Rudd history. Yes, he married Phoebe on Friends. But of recent, his ability to sing and parody, he has at least three videos that he did with Jimmy Fallon. They're both singing. And instead of talking a lot about Endgame when he was on the press junket the other day, he went on Fallon's show and all they did was play their version of You Spin Me Round by Dead or Alive. And it was brilliant and hilarious and brilliant again.
And the two films of the Marvel canon that he is specifically mm-hmm. the star of.
I love.
Ant-Man and Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'll tell you, they're different. They're definitely not serious. They're irreverent.
Yes.
Like the universe is not at stake in these films, but they are so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
They are just absolute delights.
Now, I am thrilled and excited to say that my friend from college, his cousin just happens to be Agent Carter, And so I just want to throw that in there. And I've also spoken with Sean Bean.
Was it Haley? Anyway, Haley Atwell?
Yeah, Haley Atwell.
Well, I mean, for nothing else, like to be the object of Steve Rogers' affections.
So I just want to say, forget Kevin Bacon. I am one away from the entire cast of this film.
You're basically saying that you are a reserve Avenger.
Yes.
Is what you're implying.
I am saying that.
It's quite nice. Disney's legal department will be contacting you shortly.
Anyway, let's talk about people who are not in it, because I expected to see Phil Coulson. And I did not understand. When I left the movie, I thought,
As I understand
somebody
this.
Should be here, and it was Coulson. Because he has a TV show, for crying out loud.
The way I understand it, the Joss Whedon era of Avengers movies, mm-hmm. Age of Ultron and 2012's Marvel's Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Coulson passes in the first of those. It's meant to be a very meaningful sacrifice. Now, he is brought back, I believe, a year later in the TV show Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Which is still in production?
Yes. It's going into its, I want to say, sixth or seventh season, I believe.
Okay.
It's very enjoyable, and it's actually gotten better as the seasons have gone on. I thought it was fun, but I didn't love it first season. But it's a show that has, I think, grown as it has progressed.
Mm-hmm.
However, Feige and Whedon had both kind of said, Marvel TV isn't ours. Like they made that decision independent of us. But we feel like it cheapens that sacrifice of what happened in that movie. So for all intents and purposes, Phil Coulson is dead in the movie universe, even though mm-hmm. these are the TV show and the movies happen in the same universe, but there's different people that are pulling those strings, if that makes any kind of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why you haven't seen Coulson appear in any of the movies, save Captain Marvel. But that is because Captain Marvel takes place 20 some odd years before the rest of these are. So technically they're not violating a sacrifice because Coulson was alive then, and they're not reversing his death in any way.
Mm-hmm. So the movie's made a ton of money, and even the actors have said the last 10 minutes of the film are magnificent and for some hard to watch. The sound stinger at the end. Now, Marvel films usually end with something that it could just be them hanging out, eating falafel, just being funny, ending with Ant-Man going, hey, all that kind of stuff. There's no scene at the end of this, but we were told, because I had to check ahead of time, that there would be a sound stinger. So after all of the credits, and a lot of people made this movie, after all of the credits, you hear a sound that I was thinking could be one of a few things. It is metal on metal, like something being built. My first thought was, this is some kind of a Thor building something, but what? I don't know. Because I thought of Ragnarok when he had whatever built or something.
For those of you unaware, Jane ties Ragnarok
into everything.
If she is eating a sandwich, it somehow relates to Thor Ragnarok.
Which, I love that movie.
Which itself is also a fantastic and amusing film in its own right.
Are you ready for this?
Sure.
There were many Ragnarokian moments in this film.
Well, the other thing that particularly Infinity War and Endgame have done is effortlessly tie in all of these other...
I doubt it was effortlessly for those who did it.
I'm saying it looks like it on film. And if you will look at like the disparate nature of the different... As much as all of these are Marvel superhero movies,
mm-hmm.
one of them is about a wizard that has a time stone. The other is about like an arc reactor built into a man's chest so that like he doesn't die and eventually it powers a suit of iron. The other is about a soldier from World War II. You have a Norse god. You have a man that can shrink. These are really largely different concepts, mm-hmm. hugely different. Like some of them are science fiction. Some of them are mythological. And if you will look at like, say, superhero films in, let's say, the 80s. Basically, what they would do there, they would give you one fantastic thing that you needed to accept. And, mm-hmm. like, if you could accept that, you got like in Superman the movie, you'll believe this man can fly. Like, he's right. from Krypton. Like, if you'll give us that, everything else is largely the world that we are aware of. You just have to buy into the fact that there's an alien from another planet, and whenever he's here, our sun gives him these super abilities. These films don't ask you to believe one fantastic thing or mm-hmm. two fantastic. They ask you to take in this galaxy of fantastic. Like, not only is there a wizard with a time stone, and there's a guy with a magic hammer from Asgard. There's also this girl who's powered by one of the Infinity Gauntlet stones named Captain Marvel. She can fly through ships and smash stuff. I'm just like everything about this film. Like it in the 30, 40 years that have passed since they were doing that. Like it's amazing if you will look at the way those films were. Like the verisimilitude to real life, to assume that people, they're not going to accept this if we do it any other way. Mm-hmm. Like at this point, like superhero films are so part of the nomenclature. Like if you would have told me that Ant-Man would play a significant role in what is probably going to end up being the third or second highest grossing film of all time, if you would have told me that in 1990, told this 10-year-old boy, I would have laughed at you.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have read of recent, and I'm almost positive it was about the Marvel films as a whole. It had to have been. But somebody wrote something about how the canon of Marvel films to And they attributed it to millennials. It's like, not just millennials. But they said it is much akin to a Bible in that there are followers of the whole Marvel tradition who can tell you in minute detail this and that about it. And for some people, it is a code to follow in certain respects. So it's like their Bible was the point of the whole article that I briefly skimmed. Because it's everywhere. There's just Marvel stuff everywhere. And so you can relate.
I mean, honestly, at this point, like I said, it's on, they had Netflix shows. It was on ABC, Hulu. I believe has a couple of them. Disney Plus is going to get some of them.
I'm so glad I like them.
They're all over. Like there are two Marvel films in the top five this week alone. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just from the point that they were releasing, because I think the original Iron Man and Hulk came out in the same year. They were a couple of months apart. Mm-hmm. Then you didn't see another one until 2010 with Iron Man 2. They do three. I want to say some years they've put down four of these, and like they really don't have like thuds anymore. Like Captain Marvel, I believe, just passed the $1 billion mark. Now, granted, it didn't do it in 3 days, but that's still okay. Mm-hmm. There was a point when they kind of questioned it. Like, they weren't just accepted. Marvel is so good at doing these now, they're just... Even when they get one that, when Age of Ultron came out, and it only did $1.4 billion.
Only 1.4.
They were like...
But not opening weekend.
Disney had more or less said, we're disappointed with the gross of this movie. Like, that's the bar that the Avengers films in particular, in the Marvel universe, like, kind of to a lesser degree... That's the bar that they have set themselves up. The only film series I know of that you can have a film that did like $400 or $500 million and still be said to be a failure, mm-hmm. is the Star Wars movies. When Solo didn't just blow it all up and shoot to $1 billion in 13 days, they're like, oh, this is a failure. Star Wars is dead. And I'm like, guys, it made $450 million? Like, granted, that ain't Force Awakens money, but like that's not nothing either.
Mm-hmm. So Infinity War, yes, you can see it without knowing anything at all about it, but it won't resonate as much with you emotionally if you have not the very least seen Infinity War.
You will not have that catharsis. And right. Like if you want that experience, it's large, it's epic. It does have those moments, but you will inherently experience them deeper if you have been a part of this ride.
Now, the film is 3 hours and 2 minutes long. Much like when I first saw and still watch Fellowship of the Ring, it doesn't seem like 3 hours. It is a
brisk 3 hours.
Yes.
Like, It moves itself along. It is entertaining. It's engaging. I don't remember a point that I was ever even considering being mm-hmm. bored.
And I will say, because my spouse said, oh, it's kind of slow. The beginning is slower than the rest of the film, but it's setting you up for something.
I would argue about that, because I know like some people have said it's 3 hours. Yeah, but you're tying up 21 movies, like, mm-hmm. and
there are some people who don't jump at 3 hour movies.
The problem I think Infinity War had, which was only like 2.5 hours, Infinity War had the full cast. Mm-hmm. There was a literal like kind of scrubbing of that to the point that like half of those characters literally don't exist mm-hmm. by the end of that film. This one had the benefit of kind of being trimmed down. They trimmed off the fat off the mm-hmm. steak for this one. And you get to have these characters get these moments that you would not have got otherwise.
Right. Because obviously you have the ones that were left trying to figure out how to bring everyone back, how to make the world whole again.
I would argue that this is probably some of the best work that some of them have done in this respective like set of films. Like you are getting, and like I said, it's not just because like a lot of the money is on the screen, but like you are getting some like genuinely good character moments. And I don't just mean good performances for a superhero film, but like the narrative like zenith that you are taking some of these characters to, like it's just satisfying in a way that if you are engaged at all in this, or if you're a fan of filmmaking in general, like it's at 3 hours. Because obviously at this point, they don't need to get anybody else on this bandwagon. Mm-hmm. If you're in, like you're probably in at this point. And if you are going to cap off something that you've been doing for 20 plus films in 10 years, like I don't think anybody's going to begrudge you like an additional hour or 15 minutes or whatever. Like it amazes me that people would get onto that. But I'm like, listen, if we try to trim this thing down to 2 hours, like that satisfying conclusion, and maybe you're not a fan of character X, but like chances are you are into one of these characters or a couple of these characters, and you want to see that person get a satisfying conclusion of this story that you've been following for 8-10 years. Mm-hmm. And like if you're a kid, some kids, this has been their entire life. Like, right. Like my... one of my boys, like he, one of the first films like that he would watch start to finish was Avengers. And that's the only movie that he wanted to watch. Like we have been on this ride since he accepted, oh, this thing that dad does, I love this too. We've seen every one of the Avengers movies at the theater. Like he is into this. Like I've got, you know, Halloween's where he is dressed as that, where we're both dressed as that. I should probably say. But like, I mean, this only represents like a fraction of my life. Mm-hmm. But for some people, this is literally like everything that they have ever known. Like it, I can't even imagine it from that perspective. But it's just, my boys, of which range from 5 to 13, they were in. Mm-hmm. They were into this, and I mean, getting a 5-year-old to watch a 3-hour movie is no small task.
Now, here's something I noticed, and you did as well. No one that I was aware of got up during the 3 hours. If they did, they were super silent, and nobody, I was going to say something else. I don't know. They didn't get up. Oh, that's what I was going to add. No one that I've been around has asked me anything. What they've done is saying, don't tell me anything because I don't want the spoilers. And what happens when you yell spoilers to people who are waiting in line to see the movie? Well, chances are you get a beatdown, which happened in Asia. This guy thought it would be a good idea. Maybe he thought it was hilarious.
I'm not saying that that was the proper response to it. But like that is disrespectful to... because he probably robbed a couple of those people of that emotional like catharsis, like and like it's pretty satisfying on like a plethora of levels. And to rob somebody that has put 10 years of their life or 8 years or however long you've put into that, like it's just it's disrespectful,
right? Now I would like to throw out some props to my oldest, Anna Grace, who said that she has to give a presentation, and she gets points for being able to make the class behave. And so she said she's just going to say, if you don't be quiet and listen to me, I'm going to start saying spoilers. Now, she isn't really going to say spoilers, but I think the threat of it is going to be enough to hold their attention. And I find that brilliant and hilarious. Speaking of hilarious, there are many, many funny moments in this movie.
Most of which... are owned by Paul Rudd. But yes. Robert Downey Jr. and Rocket Raccoon are also, also batting
and,
1,000.
Gotta say, Thor brings some funny. There's a lot of funny.
There was an And I won't ruin it, but like they took,
I wish I could.
They took Thor in a very unexpected and I'll go ahead and say delightful direction in this film. And like they own their choice. Like they don't do it for a moment. Like they own it. And it's
if so
you
good.
If you would have told me when I watched the first Thor that this is where you were going to take that character in the climax of the Avengers movies, I would have questioned you. But having experienced it, saw it firsthand, I wouldn't want it any other way.
Yeah, I really delightful.
Yeah, that's the only Chris Hemsworth is. It's like he is enjoying this character, like, and I think you and I've talked to a certain degree about like Thor and Thor the Dark World are not Marvel's best efforts. They're not bad movies, but like they're just
they're okay.
Thor Ragnarok, like Chris Hemsworth just becomes born again. He finds what he loves about that character, and they let him play with it in a way that they weren't in the first two films. And like this film, as much as it's a sequel to Infinity War, very much lets him take that arc that he started in Ragnarok and just he embraces this character that he has found a new love for that he's been playing since, what, 2011?
Yeah.
Something like that. 8 years. He has found a new reason and a new purpose with this character. And like as someone that is involved in this, at least from the audience perspective, like it's a lot of fun.
Can we, is it? Yeah, I can't. All right.
No, I was.
I can't bring that up.
There's.
All right. I'll pass on that.
We'll discuss it at some point, either personally or eventually like on the podcast. But Marvel has made sure that they have kept a lot of this under wraps. Right. And there are some moments that they wouldn't have hit the same way if I had known about them. So
I will say this, that a character is highlighted in such a way that I had to go Googling in order to have my questions answered. And that was satisfying as well. So once you watch it, if you have a character question, Google it and you'll find out. So, and I won't have told you anything ruined anything.
You basically need an encyclopedia like for this one. Like, I mean, it's like I said, you're decades worth, 20 plus movies.
We're talking when he says decades worth, it's not just what these characters have been through. There are just so many nuances that have been included and Easter eggs for those who, as
care
they
to,
know, will
that
watch
are paying
it a million
attention.
Times.
Yeah.
So that makes it fun on many levels. And I've only seen it once, but we all know I will see it multiple times.
Well, I've seen it twice, and I have paid for the equivalent of 9 tickets. I took my entire family to see it. Like, I wanted to see it again. I knew my boys wanted to see it, and I was just like, oh, this is going to be a whole lot of money. But I am very much a fan of making sure that my boys get that experience. Like, I remember what it was when
what about your girl?
Lauren and I have the, Lauren's not as into the Avengers movies.
Did she not go see it with you?
She did. Oh. But I'm saying, like, she is not as sold on this as the boys are.
Well, then you're slacking, Adam.
There's a lot of them. I'm outnumbered.
All right.
I'm working at it. But like, I remember when I got to see like the original Ninja Turtles movie in 1989. And while it's a much smaller scale than this, but like seeing something go from cartoon or also comic book that I had read at that point, getting to see it brought to the live action film, like it was, I remember getting to see that and just being like, holy cow, this is amazing. They are real. Like I can't have that experience like anymore as a nearly 40-year-old man. Like it doesn't strike me the same way, but I know my boys are still kind of in that headspace.
Right.
And I want to make sure that, like, as a parent, that I'm doing my job there. Like, you only get to be a kid once. And, like, your sense of wonder is eventually going to get diluted down by, you know, having to do your 9-to-5 or whatever. Mm-hmm. but I want to make sure that they get to experience magic while it can still exist for them.
And which is why we saw it opening night.
And this is what that felt like. I want it to be an experience for them. And this film, for lack of a better term, like, it's magic. Yeah. It really is magic.
And we, and when I say we, I mean nerds everywhere, we'll be talking about this. The entertainment industry is going to be talking about this for decades because of the bar it has set money-wise and the scope of employment. It just, this movie has done a lot and will affect every movie that follows it. Not even a superhero movie. This movie set a really high bar. So I highly recommend you go and see it. And I cannot wait until we can talk more about it. What do you say? We got to wait. I think after it is either buyable or on Netflix, that'll be a year. Okay. By the time it's on Netflix, we can talk about it.
This thing will play for a while.
Yeah.
Or I mean, or at the bare minimum, we could do a spoiler podcast for it.
Oh, yeah. Just, okay, yeah, that's what we'll plan.
I'm saying, like, we can
not
just
right now.
Let them know. This one just gets to be us talking about it in very generalized terms. But I mean, if we basically have, just call it Avengers Endgame, spoilers ahead.
Okay.
You and I can talk about what we want to, and if you read the very capitalized spoiler on there and decide to go in anyways, it's like pushing past the caution tape. We told you not to. We told you what was in there. If you still burned yourself with acid, at that point, it's your fault.
Yes. And we will wait until it is out of the theaters before we entertain that thought. That's a delightful idea.
I'm just saying. And I think if there's any film that is going to warrant that kind of attention, a movie that pulled in like $1.2 billion in its first 3 days, obviously is at the epicenter of something cultural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. This is a cultural touchstone, but not a cultural gauntlet. Anyway.
of infinite proportions.
Oh, thank you so much for listening. Adam and I are going to continue this discussion without you listening because we've both seen it and we have a lot to discuss. We got to get it out of our system because I've not been able to talk about this with anyone except my family.
I will say one more thing, and this doesn't directly relate to the movie. My wife, who was very much enjoying Paul Rudd, I explained to her why she liked Paul Rudd so much. I said, "You're married to Paul Rudd," and she kind of nodded, you know, and accepted it. And then about an hour later, she leans over to me, obviously have been contemplating this, just running it through her mind, leans over to me and says, "No, I'm married to Tony." And I'm like, wait. The smart aleck narcissist, like, know-it-all? And she's just like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, well, what about his more positive edge? And she's like, "Adam, there's a movie." Shh. And I'm just like, "What?" And I maybe wouldn't have taken it quite as to heart, but like, as we were in the van after the movie, the boys always like to assign which character they are. And we do this with every movie that we go to see. Without hesitation, when one of the boys says, "Well, who's dad?" Everybody, almost as if they had rehearsed it in choir, says, "Oh, dad's Iron Man." And I'm just like, "Why does everybody see me as a..."
Oddly enough, I get that assignation as well.
Evidently everyone does.
So
I was joking with her later about it. I was like, "Why can't I be Captain America? Do you not see me as a square jawed like hero with a heart of pure gold?" And she's like,
"Nope."
She's like, "Hang it up, Tony." And I'm just like, "Fair enough. We are what we are."
Anyway, it's a rocking good time. Thank you for listening to Binge or Cringe. I'm Jane Ellen,
and I'm Adam Cravens.